Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It will be a two-year nationwide effort to jumpstart job creation in America and lay the foundation for a strong and growing economy. We'll put people back to work, rebuilding our crumbling roads and bridges, modernizing schools that are failing our children, and building wind farms and solar panels, fuel-efficient cars, and the alternative energy technologies that can free us from our dependence on foreign oil and keep our economy competitive in the years ahead.
President-elect Barack Obama, from the speech formerly known as the President's Weekly Radio Address, now the President's Weekly YouTube Address, that also happens to be carried on the radio, not that anyone cares. We will be hearing from the President-elect again at noon as he officially introduces his economics team into the sharp teeth of this financial crisis. That team features New York Federal Reserve Chief Timothy Geithner as the nominee for Treasury Secretary, the only man in New York with no enemies, judging from the early reviews. And we will carry President-elect Barack Obama press conference and announcement at noon today on AM 820 and WNYC.org. For your planning purposes, we'll have the Leonard Lopate Show, as usual, on WNYC FM 93.9. We will have the Obama announcement and news conference at noon on AM 820, and both, of course, available on WNYC.org at noon today. Neil Irwin has been writing about Geithner and the economy for the Washington Post, also the Citigroup bailout this morning, and he joins us now. Neil, thanks a lot for doing this on a busy day. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be here.
Let's take Geithner first. He is not as well known as Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson or Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, but
Give him some time.
Yeah, it's coming up, that's for sure. But you've written that they have been the troika behind the bailout plans to date since the crisis began. So tell us more about Timothy Geithner and the role that he's been playing.
Well, if you think of it this way, Hank Paulson has been, the point man for the administration on the financial crisis. Ben Bernanke, of course, is chairman of the Federal Reserve. But a lot of the nuts and bolts of executing these rescues, these bailouts, these elaborate efforts that the government's taking to try and stabilize the situation have been run out of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is run by Tim Geithner. This is a guy who has kind of made a career in public service. He worked in the Treasury Department in the Clinton administration. He was a protege of Larry Summers. He came up. He's been in the New York Fed since 2003. He has an aggressive way about him, but he doesn't ruffle as many feathers as Larry Summers. He plays well with others and tends to have a collaborative style that will make him a easier sell for Treasury Secretary than some of the other candidates might have been.
You wrote an article in September that described the no drama, no ego relationship along the lines of no drama Obama, but no drama Bernanke, Paulson, and Geithner, as they've been trying to prevent the crisis from becoming a collapse. Want to describe that interaction for our listeners, the relationship, including, again, Tim Geithner's particular role?
Sure. I would say that since September, there may be a little more drama. I might revise that if I were writing the same thing today. But the basic relationship is Paulson is the deal maker. He's the guy from Wall Street. He knocks heads. He has a very aggressive manner. Bernanke is kind of the academic. He's the professor. He thinks through the theoretical ways that risks the nation's economy faces and ways they might think through a response. Tim has been kind of the execution man. He's been although he's been part of all the discussions discussing the theory and concepts, he's been the guy actually negotiating these deals with Alan Schwartz, the former CEO of Bear Stearns, with Dick Fuld at Lehman Brothers. He's been the guy getting these executives together, holding these negotiations. He is more deeply versed in the details of this financial crisis than perhaps anyone else on Earth.
If he's been part of this troika under President Bush, then is this appointment change at all, not to mention change we can believe in?
Well, that's the trade-off. You know, the good news is there's continuity. The bad news is there's continuity. You know, so the trade-off. There are some differences between Geithner and Paulson. It's hard to figure out exactly what they are because those guys don't like to talk about them. But it's pretty clear that Geithner has been more inclined to intervene in some of these situations than Hank Paulson has. So it's not as if we're seeing Paulson Part Two. That said, Tim Geithner has signed off on and been part of every decision that Paulson has made throughout this crisis over the last year, and so to the degree that response has been lacking and has had failures, he is partly responsible. He has some culpability for that.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have Maya Angelou coming up for a little relief from all of this in about 10 or 15 minutes. Until then, we can take some of your calls and comments and questions online for Neil Irwin from The Washington Post about the appointment of Tim Geithner and anyone else on Obama's economics team and the Citigroup bailout at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and our comments and question page still up there for the question, should the government bail out Citigroup? Do you understand this bailout? I mean, it's part loan guarantee, part direct investment, part purchase of toxic assets like the plan Paulson abandoned for the other banks. This is way over my head.
Well, it's pretty complicated, and there's a lot of elements to it, and they kind of you're exactly right that they have elements of a lot of the various iterations of this rescue plan that have happened over the last couple of months. The important thing is to remember this. There's you know, the problem with Citigroup, in the view of government officials, has not been that it was about to go under, that it was in an immediate crisis. The risk has been that there's been a run on its stock that might cause lenders and counterparties, all the people who do business with Citigroup, to pull away, that could become a self-reinforcing cycle and actually cause the demise of an otherwise reasonably healthy bank. So what the government's doing is saying what people are afraid of, what investors are worried about, are these toxic assets, these mortgage assets, that there's some risk they'll be worth vastly less than Citi has already estimated. They've already marked these things down, but the question is, will they be worth even less than they've already been marked down to? So what the government's doing is saying, we'll separate $306 billion worth of that stuff into a separate pool, and then Citigroup still incurs the first $29 billion in losses on that pool. But after that, any further losses on those assets, the government will take the bulk of them, about 90% of any further losses beyond the first $29 billion. So all that's just a complicated way of saying the government's essentially giving insurance against continued losses in these assets. And the government is requiring compensation for that insurance, just like if you take out a life insurance policy, the insurance company asks you to pay them. What Citigroup's paying the government is $7 billion worth of preferred stock in exchange for this insurance against these assets continuing to deteriorate. That's the major element of this plan. There's another slice of it, which is another capital injection. The government had already put $25 billion into Citigroup. Now it's going to put $20 billion more, this time under less favorable terms to current investors. So the government is trying to demand a little more in return. But those are the major elements of this rescue plan.
Sean from Brooklyn writes, so is Citi Field, the Mets' new stadium, destined for the typical corporate name change every year now? Another bonehead move by the Mets, naming their new stadium Citi Field. Ha ha. But why do they think that buying up the toxic assets, the bad mortgage debt, is a good idea again after they launched that and then abandoned it along the way till now?
I think the major problem with buying toxic assets, which is what, of course, during the initial debate over the bailout, that's what Secretary Paulson was arguing for, and then he reversed course very, very quickly afterward. Someone in Congress accused him of a bait and switch. I think the reason he changed direction was that he concluded that buying toxic assets would give the government less bang for the buck in terms of stabilizing the financial system. When you inject money into a bank, it's capital. They can borrow against that capital and expand their lending or take other measures with a multiplier effect. If you buy toxic assets, right, it's more of a one-to-one.
So why are they buying $300 billion or covering $300 billion of toxic assets here?
You know, what they've done throughout this process is tried to target the response to the nature of the problem. And I think in the view of the government, the risk affecting Citigroup was kind of downside risk on these toxic assets. And so that's what made most sense to give some faith in the future of Citigroup. You know, if anybody's too big to fail, it's certainly Citi. The question you're asking is a very valid question, and one that I think a lot of us will be asking Treasury right. Secretary Paulson and others involved in this effort in the weeks ahead.
And maybe they'll ask at the news conference today at noon when Geithner is introduced by President-elect Obama. We'll be carrying that at noon on AMA 20. Jennifer from Manhattan writes, "I, for one, would have liked a fresh pair of eyes. I'm disappointed by the Geithner pick, and I haven't been impressed by Obama's other picks either. The man hasn't even been sworn in yet, and I'm already lapsing into disappointed cynicism." Dawson on Staten Island. Dawson, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, how are you? My question is this. My understanding is the Department of Justice has a division called the Antitrust Division, and their very job is to make sure that no corporation gets so big so they have an undue influence over the economy. And it appears when you look at AIG, the three companies, Citibank, Chase Bank, and these large corporations, that they've gotten so big that not only do they have control over the industry, they're basically holding the economy hostage. And my question is, how come this happened?
It's a great question. And Neil Irwin, I would think that as they look at the long-term issue of re-regulation and how to, you know, not allow as risky investments as got us into these things, one of the first principles that should at least be discussed is perhaps having some kind of law that forbids any company from getting so big that it's not allowed to fail.
I think there'll be a very big discussion of that. It's not an antitrust issue so much. That the antitrust law is more focused on you know, maintaining a competitive environment. But on the too big to fail issue, here's the problem. Here's how this arose. You have different regulators for different kinds of financial companies. You have, you know, the Fed and others regulate banks. You have the SEC regulated investment banks back when they existed. They've all either gone under or become banks now. But those regulators have always been focused on the soundness of the individual institution they're regulating. So if you're at the SEC, you're trying to make sure that you know, Lehman Brothers is sound, or Bear Stearns is sound, or Merrill Lynch is sound. If you're the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, you're trying to make sure that Citigroup or JP Morgan are sound. Thing is, that equation doesn't make room for figuring out the systemic risk that the institution creates. So even if you think that Bear Stearns was well run, which apparently it turns out it wasn't, there wasn't much attention paid to the degree to which the things that Bear Stearns were doing created risks for the financial system as a whole and for the whole economy. That's almost certainly going to change as there's a reworking of financial regulation. One proposal that Hank Paulson has proposed is that the Federal Reserve be given a role as systemic regulator, as financial stability regulator, and that it would be able to go into any institution, whether it's a hedge fund, an insurance company, an investment bank, whatever it might be, to assess and deal with any issues it creates in terms of risks for the financial system as a whole. So I think that's a very valid concern and something that will be very hotly debated next year.
Dawson, thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Washington Post financial reporter Neil Irwin and Joanne in Hastings on Hudson. You're on WNYC. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I'm really concerned about the role that short sellers have played in this, since companies seem to be valued by their share price. GM was 43 just a couple of months ago. Then when it fell to 3 or something like that, the retirees all said, well, but if they don't have, they go bankrupt, they don't have money, how will we get our money? Nocera, the editor of finance at the New York Times, said how many trillions of assets had vanished. It didn't vanish. They went into the pockets of the traders. Since there's all this computerized trading that just goes on instantly, not backed by really owning the stock, they should not be allowed to sell anything, borrow against, or insure something that does not belong to you.
It's another great question. And in fact, Neil Irwin, as you know, Citigroup has been complaining in the last week about predatory short selling, that is, Wall Street bettors on the share price going down just to drive it down, despite the underlying health of the company with, you know, tens of billions of dollars or more in assets. Any thought?
I'll be honest. I'm always mystified that Wall Street executives who have spent their careers preaching the virtues of free markets and market mechanisms and their ability to find a rational price to blame short sellers for their problems. It's clear. Look, it's absolutely clear that there are hedge funds and others that are. Trying to sell off and bet on the demise and the downfall of these companies, and they made some good money this year doing it, and that's certainly been a factor in the kind of cascading series of negative things that these companies have experienced. That said, the way markets work is, you know, some people bet on something, some people bet against it, and through that equilibrium you find a price. The truth is the government tried to ban short selling, or did ban it a couple months ago, and
temporarily.
And especially for financial companies, was the initial wave of that ban. The view in the government is that it didn't work terribly well. That it didn't so much eliminate the negative pressure on some of these banks. It instead, what it did is kind of caused hedge funds to pull out of the market entirely. You know, hedge funds often work by buying some of one stock and selling short another, so they're kind of betting on those two stocks converging in price. Mm-hmm. So instead of just not betting against anything, they pulled out entirely, which contributed to some of this volatility we saw. So it's a more complicated issue than just these nasty short sellers or driving Citigroup down. It's a more complicated issue than
that. Last thing, and we've just got a minute left, and then Maya Angelou will be here for some blessed relief and inspiration, which we all need right about now. But on the question of bank failures, we're all talking about saving Citigroup, and Wall Street seems to like it, or they like something, because the Dow was up 300 points. But there were three banks that failed over the weekend, but they're hardly getting any mention in the press. Federal regulators seized three banks, Downey Savings and Loan, a large California mortgage lender, and others, expanding what is by far already the most expensive crop of bank failures in modern American history, and indicating that the pace of failures is increasing. How much stress do you see on the FDIC itself, and should we be talking more about failures like these?
The truth is, it's unfortunate for the people who either worked at or are customers of those individual banks. But in terms of those kinds of smaller institutions, their ability to affect everybody in the world, they don't really hold a candle to a Citigroup. You know, Citigroup is so big, $2 trillion in assets, another trillion or so off the books, so about $3 trillion in assets spread all over the world. If Citigroup were to go down, it would cause really just massive, massive problems for not just Wall Street, not just executives, but for anyone who owns a stock, anybody who has money in a bank or in any other kinds of investments, it could be a very dangerous situation. So, look, we're in a banking crisis. We're losing some banks. It's very unfortunate. But there's a lot that's unfortunate about the current situation, and we're all trying to get through it with as little pain as possible.
Well, just direct everybody's attention to a little bit of history in a Washington Post article today. I don't think this was your article, Neil, but there was a little bank called First National City once upon a time in the 1920s that first made its name and first got into trouble by selling the securitized mortgage assets of its time from Latin America, apparently, and selling them as safe bets. And a lot of people lost money. First National City later became Citibank and Citigroup.
Not only that, the demise of the problems with National City contributed, were a major factor in the securities regulation of the 1930s, the creation of the SEC, Glass-Steagall, all the things that came out of the 1930s and securities regulation came about in part from a response to National City, and there's plenty of reason to think the same will be true in this next wave of financial regulation.
Neil Irwin, financial reporter for The Washington Post, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And we'll talk more about this with Thomas Friedman coming up next hour, including why the bailout for regular Americans to come may rival that's being doled out to Wall Street. So stay with us for that. But Maya Angelou coming up in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.